Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. We have a caller. We're going to get to in just a second, but we first want to tell everybody how to get a hold of us today. 914-338-0164 is the caller number. Please press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. 859 area code is in the queue. Assuming you want a reading, but you should press 1 so we know for sure. That person pressed 1. So we're going to be getting to that call in just a minute. But we want to also invite our callers and listeners to follow us, to like our page on Facebook. And you can follow us on Twitter too. But Facebook is kind of where we promote the show the most and are most active. We don't do a lot of posting on there, do we, Neil?
Not a lot, I wouldn't say.
But it's a nice way to support us. So do like our pages or follow us on our personal page. And those links can be found on our Blog Talk Radio profile homepage, the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Okay, 859. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
I'm from Kentucky, and I just had a question. I wanted to get a reading about, I haven't dated in like 13 years, and so I get pretty discouraged, and I don't know how to get back out there. I'm not even sure if there's anybody out there for me, so I was wondering if I could get a reading about, like, love or relationships or that sort of thing.
Okay. What's your birthday, Lisa? Full birthday?
It's
12/26/68. Okay. 11/21/35/8. Okay. You've got an 11 in there and a 22. So that can present problems in relationships. Did you have difficulty in your earlier years in your family life? Was it any divorce or anything like that? Or
no, I've never been married, but the
No, in your family, parents.
Oh, no, my parents weren't married.
Though they weren't married, okay.
No.
Not married. So that, but that's, so that wasn't a marriage. And then that you said you have difficulty, had difficulty in that. Growing up, was there, did you have a relationship with both of your parents?
Oh, yeah, I did. I had a good relationship with both of my parents. I did, yeah.
You had a good relationship with your parents. So was there difficulty in your home or was it outside the home?
My dad was married. He had a wife, but he had a child by my mom. But he was always in my life and always in her life, like both of their lives equally. And so I grew up with my brothers and sister, and I had difficulty in the relationship with my siblings, growing up with them, being a child from that type of thing. Yeah.
I see. Okay. So, all right. Just getting everything figured out and 35 years old. There, that would have been in, let's see, 2003, is that right? Did I do that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2003. Any change or anything? Actually, 2003, 2004,
mm-hmm.
as you're at the end of the year. Anything happened then?
2003, 2004. You were 35. I think I was dating someone around that time, about around 2004, 2005.
Oh, you were dating somebody. Okay, so that kind of, it's interesting yeah. because you're calling about a relationship and you were dating someone at the time. All right. Well, Lisa, I think, well, I'm going to hand it over to Neil, but I do believe that you're going to be in a relationship again. You have really great numbers in your year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mm-hmm. think, I mean, I don't, there's nothing that is revealing, you know, you being a single person for the rest of your life, especially because
okay.
you want to have a relationship. But Neil might have something else to say or some other insights. So I'm going to hand it over to you for
well,
a few minutes.
Lisa, first of all, I want to ask you a personal question. In your lifetime, mm-hmm. did you ever struggle with weight problems?
No, I didn't when I was always very tall and thin, but I do now as I've gotten older.
Yeah, you, mm-hmm. so you're struggling with weight problems now a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And did you ever date anyone in your history that was in the armed forces or in the military? Was there any military connection in your lifetime?
No, mm-mm.
No. Okay. Now, the approach to looking forward as a relationship, my thought is that you're going to be involved with someone who has had a military career. They're retired now. You're
mm-hmm.
51.
Yes.
And they're no longer in the military. They might be doing something else. Would you say that that as an occupation, you've been comfortable? And do you work? Do you have are you employed?
No, I'm not. I'm on disability.
Yeah, I thought so.
Does this disability
yeah.
allow you to be comfortable?
No. Well, not really. And I'm only comfortable right now just because I have some savings. But no, it doesn't.
So your disability checks do not satisfy your needs, your physical needs, your survival needs. So you're supplementing.
No, not alone. Yeah, with what I have in savings, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is the nature of your disability? Did you hurt your back or what happened?
I have, I have two. I have a mood disorder. And then I also have diabetes.
Oh.
Is the diabetes related to your weight or is it genetic? Is there in the family?
It's genetic. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do you get out much? Do you do much socially?
I do.
For instance,
well, my family. I'm only social with like my children. Majority of the time, and I did do a little stuff in church, but you know that's all stopped. And right now, pretty much my whole
COVID.
Yeah,
is,
because of COVID.
Well,
okay,
Lisa, you've had children.
I do. I have children. I have four.
Four children,
and
you were not married. You said.
No, I was not married. I've never even lived with a man before.
Well, how did you come about to have children with this man?
Or men?
I was in a relationship with him. I was young. I was
so
in a relationship with him. But yeah,
for all
no,
four?
They don't.
They don't. I didn't think so. I didn't think so.
Different fathers.
I thought they were different fathers. Yeah. But when you said, when I was, that's where I was going. But then you said I had a relationship with this man. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'm wrong on that.
So
but
they
are different fathers.
So you've been in relationships.
Yes.
You've given birth to four kids. And were these men gainfully employed? Did they work?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For instance, what kind of work did they do?
Electrician. I was an electrician. And then the other relationship I was in, he was a lot younger than me. He was 14 years my junior, my senior. So he just kind of was in and out of jobs, basically.
And to your knowledge, none of them were in the military, huh?
Oh, no.
So, and did you get child support from these men? Well, I mean, I'm assuming they're grown now.
I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're over the age of 18 now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Your situation, like Kristen was explaining, your first four numbers add up to 11, 1, 2, 2, 6. And that is really suggests in our terminology of numerology, problems in relationships. Now, Kristen mentioned that she sees something good coming for you. You're master number 8. You have an 8 in your year. I agree with her.
She's a broken up 8, 6, 2. That's probably why she's having some problems getting a relationship too.
You're not
aside from the 11.
You're 30. Your karma is 35. Your master number is 8. It's not divisible. There's a difference of 3. So the one multiple of 8, Lisa, would be the age of 48. Mm-hmm. That's 6 times 8. So somewhere between 48 and
but she's
56.
50, she's 51.
I know.
But
somewhere between 48 and 56, this relationship is coming. Now, you've already gone through 3 years since then.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a 3-year difference in the multiples of 8. So between 32 and 35. So there's a prediction that there could be a relationship coming even as soon as the roundup of the age of 51. But it's going to come somewhere in the window between 51 and 54, I think.
Okay.
Now that means that in a reading, you're going to be in a relationship. We can't pinpoint the exact date. All we can say is that there seems to be something to do with somebody who was in the military at one point. And and that, you know, you socialize with you might want to broaden your socialization window a little
bit. But she's saying it's difficult because of what's going on now.
I know.
And you're in Kentucky. I know in California it's probably more strict what's happening as far as lockdown and or sheltering in place. So are restaurants open there? Are masks required everywhere in your state? How is it working there?
We don't have to wear them like out of doors, but we do have to wear them when we enter any type of establishment, if we want to, you know, patronize an establishment or anything. And restaurants are open, just not at full capacity.
So you can eat inside. Here, right now, we've not been able to eat indoors for a few months. It's all outside. But we just opened in an adjacent county. They're opening for indoor dining, which is what you're doing, obviously. So
yeah.
And have you ever done any online dating, which we don't suggest, but just curious?
I did. It was years and years ago when I was younger. I can't remember how many years ago. And it didn't. He was a scammer.
Yeah.
But I haven't recently.
Yeah, so I think instead of doing online dating, like Neil was saying, broaden your horizons socially, if that's possible. Do you have any hobbies that are interests that might open up possibilities of meeting somebody? Anything you like to do?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of, I have like a broad interest. I'm interested in a lot of things, a lot of French things I like, but I love music. I love movies.
So you're you have a culturally active life. There's one name that's coming up perhaps for the future, and that name is Daryl. Somebody named Daryl.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So look out for that name as a signpost or something. Did you ever work throughout your life?
I did. Mm-hmm. I sure did. I worked last year.
What kind of work were you accustomed to doing?
I did several things in my younger days, but the main thing later, around the 2000s, I started doing a lot of factory work. Assembly
kind of
and stuff like that. Assembly line work, working with machines. I did injection molding, building sunroofs, building car rims, just all kinds of different type of factory jobs.
You have a strong manual mechanical energy field that you seem to be adept at. I mean, you're not, putting cherries on cakes. You're more in the mechanical world.
But did you ever work in the food industry ever in your life? Like any restaurant?
When I was a teenager, I worked at Captain D's, and it didn't last
That's
long at all. I did not like
food.
It.
But I thought you worked in fast food. So I got that. Even though you were saying, why you worked in factory. So, but you didn't like that. You liked doing the factory work.
Yeah.
Well, your journey holds forth a relationship. It's in your code. But, you've got to fight things like depression and be positive and try to put yourself out there. I think if you make that agreement with the world, the world will come back and tell you, okay, you're going to be in a relationship. Because I do see somebody, and I'm telling you, they had a previous career in the military.
Okay.
So they have their own problems, and they're looking, they're kind of lonely, and they're looking for someone to share a life with, and they don't want to be alone. Are your children, would your children be a burden to a new love interest?
Oh, no.
They're all grown?
Yeah, they're all grown. There's 35, 32, one will be 30 next month, and then one is going to be 23 in November. And they're all independent. They all have their own lives. Couple are married. They have kids. They have 13 grandkids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this guy is not going to be bothered by your history, nor bothered by your handicaps, your disabilities. He has his own problems, but what he wants is to share a life with somebody. He just likes being alone. And I'm telling you, he's got some kind of old jalopy or old car, and he doesn't work, but he doesn't want to get rid of it. Do you have an interest in old cars, or do you like to?
Yes.
Well, this guy, you might start to go online with people who are interested about automobiles and like to chat about it and talk about old cars. And you could go online and just form a friendship at the beginning with someone who just likes to, has an interest. Find someone go on the internet, not a dating site. Go on the internet and find a site where you have where there's a similar interest you like to talk to people about, like if it was dogs or cars.
There's probably even Facebook. Are you on Facebook?
No, I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on any social media. I do have Instagram, but I haven't used it in a couple of years.
Well, you have a computer. You can look at different chat sites.
Yeah.
Where people are not looking.
Yeah.
They just like to talk about things. Find an interest you have. Go on that site and start to form friendships.
See, the thing about something like Facebook, I don't know about Instagram, but Facebook, if you are on it, has groups. And there's tons of groups with old cars. With people that like old cars and things like that. But if you're not on,
you're probably right.
But you can always establish a profile. But there are, you know, social media obviously supports social relationships. So there may be other sites aside from there, I'm sure there are, where you can get into conversations.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I will definitely do that.
Okay.
I like that. Easier than trying to date someone, just, you know, becoming friends with them and getting to know someone that way. I'm way more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try that one.
And let us know how what happens if, you know.
Okay.
Call us back.
Okay. I will.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. I imagine it's like, if you're single now and then you're having to date, I mean, how can you can't even see people's faces. It's like, you know, half a face.
No, you'd have to.
I mean, it's how do you even really know?
Well, you could,
once the mask goes off, it's
like
get me out of here.
A fan club of the Long Ranger, and you can meet people and they're all wearing masks and that's the way it is. I don't know, you know. I mean, you can go online or do FaceTime.
FaceTime, yeah, FaceTime.
And they could show your face there.
Yeah, you have to, but I'm talking about the initial meeting, you know, being out in a social setting. She enjoys music. She could maybe meet somebody at a concert or something like that. But if you're in that type of setting and you're masked, and you have a connection with someone,
well,
obviously,
you know,
a spark, and then the masks, you know, you go further and the masks come off and you're
in the old ballroom, they would wear masks in Elizabethan times and dancing situations. Masks were mandatory. You wore a mask. You never knew who you were dancing with.
Well, maybe we could channel some energies from Elizabethan times, and we can get some insight on how it was for them.
The mask ball, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's true, but.
But yeah, that's, you know, you just have to kind of work around it. I don't even look at each other, so we don't need masks. But
why is that supposed to be funny?
It's called a filler.
It was a filler.
We've got to get a laugh track.
I don't
hear, but the idea that when someone's having trouble in relationships, and that's a common theme. And they call psychics to see if a relationship's coming. And most psychics will say, yeah, I see something coming. Most of them will say that just is a standard reaction. But every once in a while, you'll get a psychic that says, I don't see anybody coming. I've had clients where I've had to tell them I don't see anybody on the horizon at all.
That's less common, though, situation.
Yeah.
It's not as common. If someone wants, I mean, well, most people, not most people, but if generally when people that we encounter are seeking a relationship and want one, the larger percentage are going to have a relationship than not.
Yeah.
Greater percentage.
Sometimes it's just in the code. you're not going to have one. Some people elect, but when they come down to the earth from an astral intermission, so to speak, they elect to come down without forming a relationship. They're not that interested. They don't really need it. They don't really want it. They're very comfortable being alone. And there are people like that who are alone and they have no struggle with that. Other times people meet up with confrontation and trying to form a relationship and they don't understand why. Well, that's the karmic record. There's something karmically going on that could filter down into maybe a physical problem.
Right.
You know, that they have some kind of problem personality wise or health wise, or they're awkward looking. Some things are already set in motion, and some things can be remedied by a change in attitude or an outlook or a change in your appearance.
Wear a mask and you'll get a relationship.
Not everything is set by rigid karmic rules.
No, but sometimes, I mean, what? I'm sorry.
Well, sometimes we just find ourselves being in charge of our destiny. And we can alter a problem by changing our attitude or appearance or doing something different.
But I think most typically people that we talk to on the radio and off the air there are some people that are single and striving for a relationship and have a hard time achieving or meeting people. But a lot of people have karmic struggles in relationships. So they get the relationship, but then they have problems within that relationship.
Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes people just have problems. A lot of times the 11s in the energy field of the person's birth date demonstrates or illustrates that it's going to be problems. And that's just because of the nature of the number. As to why that would be occurring. But 11s do come in with some sense of at least challenge. We all have challenges, but 11s have a real severe kind of challenge going on in terms of that number. I don't know why it is. I mean, in formation of the number system, 11s are just two ones facing each other. But there is something about the 11th energy that has some ominous kind of or dark kind of attitude in it that I've discovered over years and years and years of research. I don't know really you could imply that it has something to do with certain points in history and with the apostles, or there might be something that was already in the energy of that. Yeah, the Judas.
There's Judas.
But the idea that why it came to be that, I mean, it's an odd number. It is odd by one point above the completion of 10, which is a commanding number of completion. And it's got this extraordinary, it's almost like being an outcast. A lot of 11s find themselves in sort of an outcast position, meaning that even their attitudes seem to be in contrary to most people. And they develop a sense of being in their own world. A lot of them have ego problems.
Well, that's because it's second chakra. I mean, it's a two.
It's a two, yeah. It rounds up as a two, which brings it down to a lower element. But what it does, if you look at the second chakra, really, it is, but in it is that root chakra. It's the root chakra of energy, our foundation. Everything that we are founded upon, our home, our families, the way we're rooted to the earth, that is now combined with the sexuality of who we are, whether it's male or female, our sexual orientation, our sexual energy field in terms of intensity. And then what gets wrapped up in that is our ego, because our ego in the second chakra is sometimes connected to our very idea of what sexuality is. In the natural world, people need to have a strong sexuality because they have to parade in front of the female. They have to go into battle for the female. They have to do all kinds of dance, exhausting dances, and color their
feathers. I know the males are always prettier than the females, you know.
Yeah. Which is odd because in life it's usually the females that are getting made up.
Right.
But a lot of times when the females get made up, it can be because they're on the hunt, but there are thousands and billions of females who just like to get made up because they want to feel pretty, and it has nothing to do with attracting a man. They can't walk out of the house without makeup. It just is in them to have it. And then there are those women who, the Jane Goodalls, who don't even know what makeup is. They just go out and you don't have to be Jane Goodall to have that kind of consciousness. But it all wraps up into the element of how sexuality promotes our being or our essence, and how that forms and standardizes a set of that makes us either very aggressive or passive, or perhaps in a more healthy term, assertive. Assertive is a lot different than being aggressive. So when you assert yourself, you're doing so in a way that is not as obnoxious as being aggressive. But a lot of it boils down to sexuality. Freud would have said, well, everything boils down to sexuality. And it's all set and standardized by the time you're 5 or 7, and you get into other aspects of your energy. Ego or the superego, things like this. But when we look at a birth date, right, we could look at a birth date and separate it as the id, the ego, and the superego. We could actually devise a concept of that, because the depth of our deeper energies, our karma, who we are as individuals on a deep level, has a lot to do with karma, because that's what comes a washing up in our organism of life and who we are. A lot of that is the washed up energy of past lives. What comes up in our energy field through all that liquid and water and salt water and muscle and tissue and brain, all of that, as it combines with the soul, is comprised of a lot of past life composition. And that becomes like what our it is. It's our inner essence. It's what we are inside. Now, some of that has conflict in it. A lot of it does. And some of it's timed. So karma sometimes has time limits. Sexuality can have a certain time limit. Creativity can have a certain time limit. Diseases can have a certain time limit. Well, our ego is separated like pieces of a pie, and each piece is a different theme of our life. And that piece is connected to a karmic timetable as to what we are obligated to experience until that karma is diminished. So karma takes an outstanding position in terms of it saying, you need to face me and you need to diminish me.
But if we're dividing the birth date into the id, the ego, and the superego, and we're talking about karma and time limits and things like this, there's also the factor of one's own creative energy in regard to that time scale and what a person chooses to do. So someone can be involved in the id energy of their life for the entire span of their lifetime when there was opportunity to actually get into a deeper sense of themselves, but unfortunately they just can't get past the karma.
Yeah. There are people who are locked in karma throughout life. And those are difficult people to work with, because if you're skilled at looking at birth dates and reading people, and you decipher that a person is going to be locked in karma for their whole life in order to resolve it. That gets difficult.
Yeah, but I mean, there's people that are locked in karma by their own choice because they keep recycling instead of moving into a higher energy field.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a bounce back, backsliding, bounce back. You keep, it's the Oedipus, it's not, it's Sisyphus.
Wrong mythology, yeah. mythological character. 519 is listening, but if she wants to talk, please press 1.
Okay, you want to come on and ask a question?
519, it's Jennifer. She's just listening. She doesn't want to talk.
Well,
maybe she lost her voice.
That's just it. I mean, the myth of Sisyphus came from Camus, a French philosopher, existentialist. And he decided that our life has a repetitive quality to it. And how do we can defy life by flipping off the gods and laughing and finding absurdity in life. We can deal with our problem, but there is this perpetual motion that we keep repeating karma and that we're locked in that syndrome. Sartre, no exit, the play and things like this, that it amplify the attitude that we are really caught in a vicious cycle of life. Now, what happens in that regard, and it can be extended into the birth date itself, is that if we live in a universe that is devoid of any controlling power, that we can't call upon God or angels or spirits or some cosmic force to get us out of our situation, there's nothing out there. The existentialist belief is that you have to create your own meaning. And from that meaning, you create your own reality, whatever that reality may be. And so you essentially become your own God. Nietzsche's philosophy, getting into that extent, superhuman, things like this, Superman. And when you get into your own concept that it is up to you to define existence. It's not up to look into a Bible or a book or some source of spirituality. If there is spirituality, then you create spirituality. If there is a God, then you create that God. This is what the existentialists classically believe. There was an earlier form, Kierkegaard, people like this, who established a division of religious existentialism, where there was a combination of the two before it branched off into a more of a severe definition that we live in a godless world. Now, if you look at your birth date, on that behalf, if you look at your birth date, you go, I'm in control of this birth date. Forget about gods and angels and things like this. That's my birth date. I was born on that day. And if you're going to say that those numbers represent something, then I'm going to make those numbers into my own creation. What you say a 6 is about imagination and visionary, that I don't need to talk to God or angels or spirits. I will create my own image, my own spirituality, my own vision. I will create that and claim that 6 as my own and screw karma. That's fine, too.
Well, some people are going to be more successful with that approach than others. You know, if there's a strong ego energy and you know, that the person comes in with and is able to create on their own and is divorced from the idea that there's karma and just, you know.
Well, we have to get past this level of traditional accomplishment. If one can claim the right to do anything without having to feel that they have traditionally accomplished their goals, if you're striving towards a certain thing, and you're in the process of working towards that goal, you are accomplishing your goal. You're living in your vibration. What gets dangerous in the human condition is when people find no meaning. They just get up, they do what they do, they go to bed. And that's the Sisyphus. They keep doing the same thing. There's no meaning. It's drudgery. It's terror. It's torture. It's like concentration camp.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people in the world that are on their quote path, whatever it may be, that they've chosen in their life, and they're struggling, and they're not happy, even though their life has meaning. So,
well,
you know,
there may be
people that are ambivalent about life, but there's also,
well,
you know, people that are unactualized and don't, you know, haven't made it in whatever field that they are striving to.
Maybe you won't make it, but you have to shift gears and use as your steering wheel attitude. Your attitude, if your attitude is, I have the privilege of pursuing what I love to do. I get to do what I love to do. Even if you have to work 8 to 4, 8 to 5, and you can only come home at 5, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and you do your hobby from 7 to 9, after you have a brief dinner, you're still in pursuit. The very tidbits of life, one day in the life of Ivan Dabanovich, the very tidbits of life become extremely important. That was Solzhenitsyn. That becomes very important to the aspect of how we define our existence, even if it's something as small as a morsel of bread. Jack London, to build a fire, what it is to survive under the harshest conditions and to take pride in the fact that you did develop a spark. You did accomplish something. You did make something work. Some people, I remember years and years and years ago, a guy came for a reading, and I said, what gives you pleasure? And he said that I did one good deed in the day, that I made one person happy. I go, well, what accounts for that? Opening up a door for an old lady, and she says, thank you. That changed her life. That changes her destiny. That changes her attitude. And I did it. I helped to do it. If I can do one good deed a day, I'm happy. I thought, gee, this guy's happy with 3 pennies in his pocket. He doesn't have to have $1 million. And it settled his mind that he was of importance. There was no ego involved, really. He didn't do the reading. Well, what am I going to get? Who's going to come into my life? He just wanted to discuss with someone that he probably felt confident with that his life was of value, because all he cared about was doing good deeds. And that's what he did. He worked.
What was his job?
I forgot. He had a menial job. It wasn't even, he was one of those people you walk by
and you don't know them.
And the person and who he is, he doesn't really have many friends himself, except for, you know, maybe he, you know, gives a lady a coffee cake once a week, and he goes there once a week or something. And, you know,
coffee cake. Okay.
He goes to the bakery, buy a coffee cake or something. The idea that there are people like that, you know, and we see them every day. We see them standing on corners with signs, whether they're meaningful or not. You know, help me, I'm hungry. You don't give them something and they look at you and go, God bless you. There are gentle people throughout in our universe, in our world, that no one will ever know. No one even knows their name.
Yeah, you know, I was reading an article a while back, and it was about a man who had lost his arm. He had no arm, and he was selling flowers on the side of the freeway here. And a young boy, it was like a child, maybe around the age of 9 or 10, decided to start a fund for this guy, because to raise money for a prosthetic arm. But they interviewed the gentleman in the paper, and he'd worked in, I forgot how he lost his arm, but he worked a number of menial jobs throughout his life without this arm. He had a prosthetic arm, but it started irritating him, not fitting properly. So he decided, I'm not going to wear it at all. And he has this job selling flowers on the side of the freeway. Of course, you know, doing it in all kinds of weather, hot, and, you know, in Southern California, he had, and his attitude, I mean, it lived in one room studio, and he had this great attitude about his life, you know, despite the circumstances, horrible karma.
The attitude, our attitude conditions us to feel comfortable no matter what our state is. And you have to have a good attitude about things. A beautiful movie was a movie called Life is Beautiful. It's colored into the extent that it's sugar-coated about the experience of concentration camps. But there were brief moments of raw realism about that. But he tried to give it a Charlie Chaplin slant about he and his son are put into a concentration camp. And
Don't say too much. I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, it's just that he tries to make life seem like an entertaining camp that they're at. And the beauty of it was the attitude, I think. Because I think as human beings, what really shines in our sense of being a human being is how we deal with tension, with danger, with depression, with horrible mishaps and disasters. It's that kind of unsinkable Molly Brown, Titanic element. You know, the band playing until the boat sinks. Life is a bookend. It's bookends.
It's also a bowl of cherries.
It's a bowl of cherries. And Tom Hanks would tell you that. But you know.
I think Irma Bombeck said life is a bowl of cherry pits or something like that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well.
She wrote a book.
But you know, it's that gentleness that we see, the Mr. Rogers kind of consciousness, mentioning Tom Hanks. And there seemed to have been some gene link there.
What?
Between him and Mr. Rogers, Tom Hanks. They're connected somehow.
Oh, if life is a bowl of cherries, what am I doing in the pits or rebound?
Yeah.
Anyway, Mr. Rogers and Tom Hanks are related?
There's something related. I'm sure I read somewhere with the gene connection between the two of them.
There's a lot of controversy about Tom Hanks that we won't go into
We don't need to go into that. That's not the point.
No.
He's an icon, an American icon.
Okay.
The James Stewart of the cinema world. But the idea that that we have to find in our lifetime some sense of beauty and design and purpose, even if it's something small that's never going to be recognized.
Yeah. He's related. Yeah, you read right.
Yeah.
Which I didn't.
So, you know, and then you mentioned Mr. Rogers, where there's a great psychologist, Carl Rogers, a great humanistic psychologist, who talked about becoming a human being, being a human being, what is to be a human being. And Carl Rogers was sort of the gentle psychologist of the mental world. He came out with a gentle slant towards things, and he was much more graceful than somebody like an Erickson or a Paget that was just more or less a behaviorist.
Analyst.
They were called
behaviorists versus humanist.
Yeah. So we have the humanities of psychology that takes us into a different scope of what it is to be a human being on a more gentle slant of interpretation and superseding the aspects of just raw behavior. But when we get down to raw behavior, when we get down to the very essence of what any potential caller or client may ask us, what is the purpose of my life? Even if it's posed as a question, am I going to get this or am I going to get that? That becomes a purpose, and we are defined by what involves our purpose. If our purpose is to pursue a career, or pursue a relationship, or to get that house on the other side of the tracks, whatever it may be, that defines our contemporary purpose in life. But with that comes attitude, And I'm not a fan of people who whine and cry and just despair all the time. Sensitive to it, understand it, but I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a fan of people who strive towards excellence and have good attitude about it, a solid attitude. They're not combative, and they understand that life can be a struggle, but they take that struggle into a design of a processing a struggle into a completion of energy. And you've made your journey much more comfortable than whining and crying all the time. So there's this essence that the attitude, now there are going to be people who say, oh, you know, how insensitive, what's wrong with whining and crying? And I'm not talking about the psychological effort to connect to people because they're in pain. And I'm not saying that there isn't a time and place to whine and cry and be depressed and beat down. That's not what I'm saying at all.
But you're talking about a general life attitude of,
yeah,
a life of whining and crying, which a lot of people,
yeah,
do.
Just all the time.
You know, state of depression all the time, which is not particularly healthy.
It's controversial. The noun and the verb, I want. As soon as I hear I want, I
that's all we hear. Are you kidding me? All we hear. I mean, it's true.
Want is a destructive word because it's forever locked in a moment of not getting it. So I try to avoid saying I want. Because what it does is it locks you from getting something. If you're wanting something, then you're longing, you're wanting it. So the attitude in terms of mind over matter, you don't say I want, say I have. Well, you don't say I have, but you say, you just design it into a different selection of verb. I am. Therefore, I'm going to have a talk with my tongue after this. But you know what I get? What I'm trying to say? I'm going late.
Yes, you are.
In your chat, I'm talking until you interrupt me, and I'll be quite glad to do. But, you know, I mean, don't you get it? Wanting something, it keeps you in a process of not getting.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the stupid movie. I shouldn't criticize, but the movie The Secret. I mean, when that came out, you know, like talking about manifesting your desires and redesigning your whole consciousness about how to bring in abundance into your life. But I mean, and so I want wouldn't be something that movie would suggest as a way to bring abundance into a person's life. But,
well, you know,
if
the word got confused with desire. So if you want something, that means you desire something. There's a positive slant towards it, but it's confusing when it becomes a process of action in the body. Because if you say to your brain, I want this, the brain doesn't have a concluding.
Right. I get that.
I
understand that. But going beyond that, I mean, even a pursuit of abundance is not on a higher level. I mean, not to say that I don't pursue abundance necessarily in my life or enjoy the finer things or whatever, but it's not, you know, that's not going to get you off the planet. And most people that we encounter are in a state of, you know, trying to attain a relationship or a job or whatever career they're doing or a house, or that's common dialogue.
I'll tell you what, talking about abundance, believe it or not, I was doing a reading once with a girl and I was talking about abundance. And she kept looking at me perplexed. I was saying, what's wrong with her? I go, what's the matter? She goes, I've never heard of that dance before, a bun dance. I go, what?
Idiot.
She goes, I just never heard it. And the way you're saying it doesn't seem to make sense. I've heard, I mean, I love to dance, but I've never heard of abundance before. I go, no, abundance. And she didn't get it. I finally had to explain, she did not know the term. She didn't know the term. The shallow as a water on a sidewalk.
What was her?
I forgot. It was so many years ago. I thought she was kidding me. I thought she was doing like Groucho Marx on me. But she wasn't. She didn't. She thought I was talking about a bun dance. And she just couldn't figure out how I was saying that. And I was saying, you know, you need more abundance in your life. She goes, and that's when she finally said, I like to dance, but I've never heard of this dance before. And I thought, oh, brother. But anyways, the idea of having, of seeking our goals probably might be a good idea to try to remove the word want and find something that has a better form of completion in it. And I'm sure that there are words out there, and I can think of them, but it doesn't matter. What we're doing is how we trigger our brains in terms of how we look at our energies, getting back to our birth dates. I have no argument with someone saying to me, well, I want to control my numbers.
I want. Yeah, you can't get out of it. I mean, it's tough because the way our language is.
Well, maybe if you understand the word, you can use it better when you understand, you know, its flaws. But it, of course, you're going to use it. yes. One can look at a birth date. One can look at one's life and take the opportunity to be in charge of it. And that might mean you have to, you know, it's like saying someone who is a perpetual pack rat. Well, you got to get rid of this.
Pack rat.
You got to get rid of some of this stuff, and then you'll have clarity. It won't go away. God's not going to come and clean it and take it away. You have to do it. And if you decide to do it, then you have more clarity and you can decide what to do from that point. So you can, you know, but it takes effort. And it takes effort to clean up your numbers and your birth date, whether they're karmic or whatever it is, or whether they're leading to something of higher transcendent content. Transcendent content isn't going to have karma in it. It's a new, transcendence is a new beginning. You're beginning something brand new. There's nothing built in to distract you. You're just transcending into a new energy, and you have freedom to move in that energy.
Yeah, but that's, karma is always a factor.
Trailing us.
It always is a factor. So you can't really say, I mean, on the planet, there's no true transcendence.
No, but the built-in transcendence isn't built in the karma.
No,
karma is karma in itself. Transcendence is something
that's
brand new.
Yeah.
So when people say, I'm trying to find something new in life, I want to try, that usually typifies something that is on a more transcendent element of energy.
Okay. Well, we are at our minute mark here. So we're back on the air on Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific. It's 12 p.m. Eastern. 12 p.m. Eastern, 3 hours ahead. So, thanks to our caller and our listeners today. We will speak with you on Friday. Bye.